Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. This afternoon, we'll discuss the outcomes from yesterday's elections. Joining me to analyze some of the results are Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, Dr. Jean Beaupre, Xavier University Director for Government Relations, Sean Comer, who was also an advisor with the Denise Driehaus campaign for commissioner, Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler joins us from Columbus, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Glad to have you all here. Let's start with the issue that I think has everybody talking. That's issue three, the issue about marijuana legalization in the state. And Jean, we'll start. Well, maybe Karen, we'll start with you instead. Tell us, you were around Columbus when all this activity was going on. Was it a big surprise when it went down?
I don't know. I mean, when you saw the early returns, it really looked like it was not going to do well. And that seemed to hold up throughout the rest of the night. The rest of the state, unfortunately, we had to wait on you folks because of the situation involving the electronic poll books down there. But once those results started coming in after 9 o'clock, they came in pretty quickly. And the early results showed it was going down by a 2-1 margin. And that appeared to hold throughout the rest of the night. And I think a lot of people were surprised in the sense that Responsible Ohio had spent $20 million on ads and really pushed this campaign. Their ads had been pretty heavily shown on television, and there'd been a lot of talk about issue three, especially in the last couple of days because of a New York Times article, and then that got the national media interested. But the backers of the opposing issue two, and those who were concerned about issue three said that they really, this was the result that they had always hoped for. They didn't spend a lot of money to get it, but this is how they were hoping it would turn out.
Yeah, and I don't think they had to spend a whole lot of money to get their message out. You know, it seemed to me from the start that there were three groups of people here. There were people who were totally opposed to legalize marijuana in any form. There were a group of people who supported issue three and wanted to legalize marijuana. Then there was a third group who wanted legalized marijuana, but not this plan. And they objected particularly to the fact that it was limited to these 10 groups, these growers, who were very wealthy people already and were likely to become much more wealthy if they got this thing through. And I think that message really did sink into to a lot of people, and it doesn't take a whole lot of money to get that message out.
Well, I think there was one other thing that I want to add, too, is turnout was key in this election.
Yeah.
And the voters who would likely support issue three, when you look at the polls on medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, and who supports that, the polls are almost exactly opposite in terms of the number of people who want those things to happen and the number of people who will vote. For instance, older folks tend to be opposed to marijuana legalization. They tend to vote more. Younger folks tend to be supportive of marijuana legalization. They tend to vote less. And that's a lot of what happened here, I think.
Yeah. Gene?
I mean, I think all that analysis is good, and I don't disagree with any of it. To me, it was the campaign was more about images. I mean, you can start in Cincinnati where we had the prosecutor coming out in favor of it. And, you know, those kinds of images, for me, as I watched it, you know, almost as a layman, just, you know, a spectator, there were a lot of forces on all sides. And then there were key words like monopoly, which in a sense has nothing to do with making it legal or not. It was, as you say, Howard, with the manner in which it was done. So I see it more as kind of a mosaic. I don't think you can say it was this thing or that.
No, there were a number of factors involved.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And Karen's exactly right about the turnout and particularly the age of the voting population.
Right.
Sean?
Yeah, I think that they were asking voters to do a lot with this one. One, you're legalizing both medicinal and recreational at the same time, which you haven't seen elsewhere. You add the monopoly language into that, And I mean, you're really asking voters to say yes to more than just marijuana, but a lot of things that elsewhere they've sort of done it in pieces. And you didn't have that here. And then couple that with the turnout, where you saw there was an attempt by Responsible Ohio to register young people. They spent a lot of time on college campuses registering them. But then do they actually go show up and vote? Mm-hmm. And I think at least the early numbers show that in these more urban areas and around college campuses, the turnout was incredibly low, in precincts in 8%, 9%. And then when the further you've moved away from the city, you see in the 40%, 46%, where there's people who are older and, as Howard noted, people who are more likely to oppose marijuana in general.
What about, Karen, Responsible Ohio's reaction to all of this? What have they said, and what do you think they'll do next?
Well, Ian James, the executive director of Responsible Ohio, who's been the face of the campaign, I think, largely, was actually in our bureau offices earlier this morning and in a pretty good mood, especially for somebody who had just lost a couple of hours ago. But he says they're not done. They're regrouping. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do next, because obviously there is an interest in at least medicinal marijuana and legalizing that in Ohio. And that's one thing. I just came from a brown bag kind of luncheon thing with House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger, who also said the same thing, that issue three has started a conversation about legalizing at least medicinal marijuana and what can be done about that. And he suggests that the Ohio House could be taking that up sometime in the next couple of weeks, or at least before the end of the session next year. So there's definitely an interest in this, and there was definitely a lot of conversation about this. But then there's the question of legalizing medicinal marijuana and legalizing recreational marijuana. If this had passed, Ohio would have been the first state in the country to do both in a single ballot issue. And that's a huge leap for a lot of states to even consider. And so I think this issue is not over, but the idea of legalizing both at the same time, I think for some people, was problematic.
Yeah, I think Sean was right. I mean, this thing just did a whole lot of things. I mean, it not only set up this mega industry of growing, processing 1,100 retail outlets, turning marijuana into candy and brownies, and it was just almost overload for the voters. And I looked at it, and there was something in there that everybody was going to not like.
I agree.
Absolutely.
I didn't like gummy bears. I meant that
bears,
seriously.
But,
I had this image then of, a kid finding a bag of gummy bears.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And parents all over Ohio, I'm sure, had that.
Yeah.
And there's one other thing I want to add here. I think, though, when you start talking about how to do this again, if you want to bring this issue forward again, it's so expensive to put a constitutional amendment on the Ohio ballot. The money that it takes, I mean, there was a lot of attention paid to the investors who paid into this to finance this campaign. But it does take a lot of money to get 306,000 signatures in 44 of Ohio's 88 counties and get this forward. And so I just don't know where that's going to come from. Volunteers, that's a really high bar for volunteers, for a volunteer-led group to really get through. So I don't know where this goes from here without some sort of a benefit, sadly, to people who are going to be paying for this, other than the benefit of, hey, it's going to be legal or it's going to happen.
Right. In this case, obviously, you had the investors who had a financial stake in this, and they were willing to put up the money to fund a petition initiative campaign, and a successful one.
Karen, you brought up something, though, that maybe other people have thought about it or heard about it. I thought it would be years before somebody could do something, to wipe the slate clean. To do something on the legislative side that you alluded to would be a shortening of that time period, in my view. The thing that I would wonder about is a legislator wanting to take the risk of having to go back to his or her constituency and explain the difference between what they were doing now and the residue of what happened from last night.
Sure. And I think you do have a situation where you've got, Speaker Rosenberger was saying that we wouldn't be having this conversation about medical marijuana and possibly considering it in the legislature if there was not support from Republicans as well as Democrats here in the Ohio House.
Right.
But you've got some people who are very anti any sort of legalization, and so you have to get beyond that. And, the whole conversation around issue three really seemed to center a lot more on the monopoly and the gummy bears and things like that. It really did didn't get to the whole issue of Buddy the mascot. But do you agree that marijuana should be legalized or not? Do you have a problem with that? And that's another, that's a really deep-seated issue for a lot of folks.
Now, some people have said even in Colorado it took several tries before marijuana became legal on the ballot. Do you think that any of you think this first step was needed just to get the conversation going?
Boy, it was an expensive first step.
it really was.
Exactly.
I think, I mean, it is, you know, maybe a first step. But clearly, nobody is going to be able to come back with a plan like this one and expect it to pass.
We invite your questions and your comments at 513-419-7100. Day's calling from Oakley. Hi, Day.
Hi.
What's your comment?
I happen to be one of the old people, and I voted against it only because of the way it was on there. I would have voted for medical marijuana. I think it should be there. I just didn't like the way the whole thing was out there.
I think that's a lot of what the no vote was about. I think she's bringing up an excellent point for people who were on that side who said, I want to see it legalized, but this is not the way to do it. But then there were those who said, hey, this is the only way we're going to get it done because the legislature's not going to take it up, and it's very expensive to try to get to the ballot otherwise. So you had both sides of that.
Day, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Sean?
Yeah, I think one thing that this did is as far as nationally in the legalization of marijuana is maybe gave a playbook for how not to do it, right? So if you look at other states and they've said, you know, we'll do medicinal first, and here was sort of a new way to try things and clearly went up in flames. And so I think elsewhere they might look back and say, okay, well, let's not try that. But here maybe it did get the conversation started in a way that couldn't have happened before. And as Karen mentioned, the legislature could take it up, because if you look at issue one and think about, you know, just, you know, 4 years ago, we saw that issue rejected, and that was a petition drive. And now we see the legislature bring it back up. And when there's an issue that is so obvious to voters that it just makes sense, which is what it looks like with issue one, there was not a lot of money spent. There weren't huge campaign commercials. There weren't lots of billboards. There was no mascot running around college campuses. And that one won with overwhelming support.
Well, let's talk about issue one real briefly before we take a break. That was the one that changed the way the state legislative districts are drawn. You really had bipartisan support there. That's not been seen any time, really, that they've tried to come up with a plan to redraw districts. Has it, Howard?
Not really. I mean, you've not seen this kind of, you know, coming together around an issue, you know, people of all points of view, political parties. I mean, nobody seemed to be against this time, which amazed me, because we've been through these campaigns before to try to reform the system. And they failed miserably because one party or the other wouldn't cooperate.
It was a willingness to rearrange the distribution of power. I mean, there's nothing more fundamental.
And I'll give John Houston, the Secretary of State, a lot of credit for that, because he kind of started that conversation, you know, back when he was in the legislature. And, you know, it sort of built and built and built until, you know, they got enough votes to be able to put something on the ballot.
We're talking this afternoon about election right after the break, Karen. Now, we're talking this afternoon about election results, and we're going to continue our discussion in just a moment. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're discussing the results of yesterday's elections. Joining us today are Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, Dr. Jean Beaupre, Xavier University Director for Government Relations, Sean Comer. He's also an advisor with the Denise Driehaus Campaign for Commissioner, Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can call 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Right before the break, we were talking about issue one and how it passed. Howard had mentioned the work that the Secretary of State, John Houston, had done with that. Karen, you wanted to expand on that.
Yeah, what's interesting here, I think, is, first of all, I don't think you're going to see a wholesale change in the way that state lawmakers are, the districts, how they're drawn. I mean, you're not going to suddenly see a lot more Democrats and a lot fewer Republicans. I think the way that the state comes out, it's really hard to create districts that would show an even split of Republicans and Democrats in the state house, just by the way that the rural areas are, the cities are, that sort of thing. And secondly, we're not going to find out exactly about that until 2022. I mean, this doesn't really take effect until after the next census in 2020, and then the maps will be done in 2021. The first election will be in 2022. So we've got a long wait. We've got to remember
7 years,
all this.
Karen.
Yes, we've got to remember all this now.
You have to have a census to do it.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. There will be some districts that will be created that will be more competitive, but I don't think there's going to be, you know, a great number of them.
Aaron's calling from Northside. Hi, Aaron. What's your comment?
Hey, my comment's about issue three. And I know I personally, how I felt this way, and a lot of my friends and family, was that this legislation just wasn't inclusive, especially of people that have been disenfranchised by the drug war and by, you know, marijuana policies of the past. And I think that to get legislation moving forward, we're not only going to need to include medical or recreational legislation, but also be inclusive of industrial hemp, because I think a lot of rural people, rural areas, might not be so keen on the idea simply of the more psychoactive part of it, but the financial incentive to them to be able to farm hemp, cultivate hemp, process hemp would be a huge boon to it.
Howard? Thanks,
yeah,
Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. It's obviously true, you know, in places where they can grow it. I mean, it's a profitable crop with many uses.
Pam's calling from Westwood. Hi, Pam. What's your question?
Hi. I actually have a comment. I'm one of those older people you're talking about.
Uh-oh.
And I totally support recreational and medical marijuana, but I didn't like the way they had the production set up. And I think Sean was actually completely right when he said they just lumped too much together in one amendment.
Yep. Thanks so much for your comment. We appreciate it. A couple more comments Karen, go right ahead.
I just want to add, the one caller kind of hinted at something that Responsible Ohio talked about doing in the future, that if Issue 3 passed, they wanted to start a campaign to try to erase some of these marijuana-related convictions that would have happened, that would not happen under Issue 3, that had happened before. And so that is another thing that I think a lot of people might be thinking about is, well, what about those people who are, you know, were caught with very little marijuana and they're now suffering that because of that situation. And so that was something that Responsible Ohio had said they were going to do, but Issue 3 was kind of the first. The
Responsible
thing
Ohio has a petition for that on its website.
Yes.
We are going to take a couple more questions on this and then move on to some other topics. Lisa's calling from White Oak. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I just had a comment on Issue 3. Myself and a lot of my peers in our 30s and 40s, I think we didn't vote for Issue 3 because we didn't like the registration process that you'd have to go through in order to grow your own and the questions that they ask in order to be licensed.
That's another point that we hadn't brought up, because you could grow. Some people, while they did have these commercial growers, the amendment did allow for people to grow small amounts of marijuana in their homes.
Yes.
Yes, Lisa, thank you so much for your call. It's a good point. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about the election last night. We haven't talked at all about Issue 2, which was sort of related to Issue 3. Gene, you want to talk about that a little? Or maybe Karen, explain it, and then we'll have Gene react.
Well, this was the issue that state lawmakers put on the ballot after Issue 3 had started their process. And this was an amendment that was designed to keep monopolies from being, as they put it, enshrined in the Ohio Constitution. And basically, it allows the ballot board, which is a four-member board of state and current and former state lawmakers, they get to decide whether an issue, a constitutional amendment that comes from citizens, would be a monopoly or not. Would it have an economic monopoly attached to it? And so that's what Ohioans voted on last night. They approved it. And there are some people who are concerned that they think that it's going to have an effect on other possible citizen-created constitutional amendments in the future. It was really intended toward Issue 3, as well as kind of a reaction to what we saw with the casino issues that got people upset. But, you know, there are some questions about, okay, this is now in the Constitution. What is it really going to affect?
Gene? It's interesting. I mean, Karen raises much more about this than I had thought about it. I thought for the last couple of weeks, especially from a campaign mode, and I saw it as maybe a legitimate issue, but more importantly, a poison bullet, you know, for the next issue down. I thought this is a good thing they can do it and say it, but there's got to be some objective there someplace to say, we put this in there, and it worked too, by the way, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. if that's the way you want to look at it. So, you know, it may have had multiple purposes. Let's just put it that way.
And Karen, don't you think there is a possibility that there'll be some legal challenges to this?
Well, I just got off the phone right before we started the show with Maurice Thompson, who's with the mm-hmm. 1851 Center for Constitutional Law. It's a Tea Party-backed hard right group, and he had been one of the most vocal critics of Issue 2. He says right now he's not really sure what can be done in terms of legal action because it is a constitutional amendment. And as we found out with casinos, the only way to do something about a constitutional amendment is do another constitutional amendment, which is what Columbus did to move the casino here. So there may not be any legal challenges because it was voted on by voters.
Mm-hmm. Sean?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to know the full effects of this one for some time. Initially, it was designed to block Issue 3, but you know, it's created a whole new power structure now for the ballot board to decide whether or not something that citizens want and can lead an initiative to put something on the ballot, and they can just say no. And if they exercise that power, then I think it could end up being sort of a questionable idea. But they may never use the power, and it could end up just being for Issue 3 as it was initially intended.
There was so much discussion that if both Issue 3 and Issue 2 passed, then what legal ramifications would be involved? Secretary of State said one thing, and lawyers on the other side said, well, they would challenge it and all those sorts of things. With that not coming to be, I'm not sure there was a whole lot of discussion, or was there, about if Issue 3 failed but Issue 2 passed, which is where we are.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. And now we're in a situation where Issue 2 is part of the Constitution. What is going to happen next? And so we may not know that for quite a long time.
Yeah, and it becomes part of the Constitution immediately.
Yep.
Not in 30 days as Issue 3
would happen. So as of today.
Yeah, as of today, right now.
Wow. So does anything...
Issue 3, if that had passed, it would have been 30 days before that could have, you know, kicked in. But this is, right today, is part of the Constitution.
Do you think that the reason that that it passed was specifically because of the marijuana issue? Do you think anybody was really looking at it strictly on the monopoly side of things, Gene?
It's a dance. I think it's really hard to distinguish the two. And you know, we can't talk about the voters as a block. So for one person or one set of people, it could be one thing, and another group would be something else.
I will say I think there was a lot of confusion about Issue 2 and Issue 3. I think you had a lot of voters who weren't sure exactly what Issue 2 would do, what Issue 3 would do, what if they both passed, what if one passed and one failed. So I think, and some of this may have been by design, to have had some voter confusion, because typically when voters are confused, they vote no.
Yes.
And so I think there was some confusion here, and this is what we have as a result.
I don't think it's just, I mean, I think that's a maxim in politics.
Yeah,
if you can confuse them, they'll say no.
Right.
This is Cincinnati Edition. We're discussing the results from yesterday's elections. Thanks to Kelly Hale for listening to 91.7 WVXU Today. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. We're talking about the outcome of yesterday's election. Joining me are Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, Dr. Jean Beaupre, Xavier University Director for Government Relations, Sean Comer, who was also an advisor with the Denise Driehaus campaign for commissioner, Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler joining us from Columbus, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We've talked a lot about the state issues on the ballot. Let's talk about a local issue, Issue 22 for the parks in Cincinnati. A lot of money spent on the pro side, yet it still failed. Howard, money isn't everything?
No, money isn't everything. I mean, it's a lot. You know, it can buy you a whole lot of advertising. In this case, a lot of TV ads that originally featured John Cranley, right, the mayor, very prominently because he was the principal backer of this thing. This was his baby. And that apparently wasn't working so well. And in midstream, suddenly he takes a back seat, and you have the former anchor person, Clyde Gray, doing the commercials. You know, who was a very, you know, trusted figure in the community. People like him. And he was making the pitch instead of John Cranley. It's not always money. I mean, you know, if you can get your message out through the media and also through, you know, just community forums, small television buys, if you've got the right message, you can win.
Gene?
Well, I do think, I think you're right, Howard. Now, I think there was also, there were hurdles in it, which was a permanent charter amendment and things like that. And that was, you know, you wonder sometimes when people say, I'm voting against it because of this, whether that's the real reason. But I had the impression that people didn't like that idea. And it's like the other issues we were talking about. There were little pieces of this that could get a constituency, sometimes larger, sometimes smaller.
Yeah.
You know, that I think, having said that, I didn't think we were, at least I felt aware of that during the campaign. I didn't think it would be the dramatic downfall that it was, though.
Yeah. Even though, I mean, within the charter right now, there are already tax levies.
Right.
You know, but...
But if it gets traction, it doesn't really matter what the reality is, right?
Yeah.
What was the percentage on that, Howard? Do you know offhand? I didn't bring that in with us. It was a pretty big.
It was 51%
Yeah, 41%
in favor.
Yeah.
Sean, your reaction?
I think that a lot of people thought it's a parks issue. People love parks. It's something that's easy to pass. But at the end of the day, it's still a tax increase. And people aren't necessarily okay with a tax increase. We just passed one last year in the county, and you know, to raise your taxes 2 years in a row, I think, is a tough pill for people to swallow. And on top of that, you had sort of a week of pretty bad press for the parks levy, where you had the donation from the parks board come out, and you had questions about who had authority over the money and whether or not there was citizen input in the process. You know, why is it moving so quickly? Is this really what we want for our parks? And on top of that, a lot of them are recreation centers and not necessarily parks. And so I think there are enough concerns raised among the voters that they questioned whether or not to vote for it.
I think the other thing, I mean, I agree. I think parks are sort of good, holy, and wholesome, and, you know, you would think that it would pass easily. But people began to realize, well, it may not be my park. You know, it may be Wasson Way or maybe some other things, all of which are wonderful, but I live on the other side of town.
Yeah, they looked at, I mean, there was a specific list of projects, and if you weren't on the list, then you look at it and say, well, what's this do for me? What's this do for my park in my neighborhood?
It's interesting. There was some strategic decision made. I hadn't thought that much about it to construct it that way, right?
Yes.
Or would it have to be constructed?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and so you might think, well, you get these constituencies that, and then a blowover
from
that.
I mean, they almost handed them the opposition these issues when they said, you know, they put things like Lytle Park on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a public-private partnership with Western and Southern. And Western and Southern gave a whole lot of money to this campaign. Right. You know, people can figure this out. People are not stupid.
Right.
And I think those kind of things hurt the pro campaign a lot. You know, they looked at where the money came from. They looked at who was going to benefit from it. They looked at, you know, certain developers were going to have, you know, the ability to possibly build beer gardens in Mount Airy Forest or whatever. And they just said, no, that's not what we need. We just need our parks cleaned up and the trails fixed and, you know, some repair work.
You know, and Sean really should speak to this because I don't know a thing about social media, due largely because of my age. But apparently, maybe more than others, this issue really started a firestorm of social media.
Oh, yes.
And people now, I mean, we were talking about it last night. Oh, you can't not think about this if you're doing a campaign anymore, whether you're going positive or negative or reactionary or whatever. So, and I think that speaks to what you're talking about. You can pick something out in that situation and go on social media. I don't know how great the effect is, but
these negative things on social media just spread like wildfire. Right. I mean, you know this. You saw it, Sean, I'm sure, every day.
And I think it has an even bigger impact in an election that has lower turnout like this.
Right.
So you know, you can spend all the money in the world on broadcast media, but that media is also going outside the city up to Middletown, and it's
people
going to Kentucky,
can't vote on this.
And it's going to Indiana. And with social media, it's so targeted, and it's within a circle within Cincinnati among people who are engaged and ready to then go work the polls and ready to go door to door and put up signs and are really motivated against this issue.
Yeah, it is a very powerful tool in an election like this.
Yep, I agree.
In this kind of election.
Does the failure of this, since the mayor was so much behind it, so much of the face of it, at least initially, does this hurt Mayor Cranley?
Well, I think he got a little spanking yesterday. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think he'll be a little more careful in the future about, you know, the kind of projects and proposals that he puts forward, and possibly, you know, try to build more of a coalition of not just the business community, but neighborhood groups and people who are, you know, important in other aspects of Cincinnati life to help sell things for him. You know, I there's no question. I mean, it was a rebuff to him.
And I think his quote, you know, in response was just classic. I mean, he did this litany of the things that his administration had accomplished so far.
Right.
And then he said, the voters have spoken and, you know, I'll respect the voters. I mean, that's as close as you can come to burying it and moving on, I think.
Yeah.
Let's move to Kentucky. The Kentucky governor's race, many thought it would be extremely close. It was not. Matt Bevin, the Republican, somewhat ran away with it.
He did run away with it, and it was really interesting just because, you know, I mean, Kentucky has this history now of electing Democrats as governor. You know, it was Ernie Fletcher was the last one. You know, you have to go back to the early 70s with Louis Nunn before you have another Republican governor. But one of the things that's happened, you know, obviously Northern Kentucky came out very strong for Bevin, but one of the things that was happening and is happening in Kentucky is, like in the southern part of the state, the western part of the state, in the rural counties that have been traditionally conservative Democratic counties, are turning red. They're turning Republican. And they're becoming more and more like the other southern states, you know, the Tennessees, the Alabamas, the Mississippis. And I think you're seeing a real transformation of Kentucky politics, you know, from this kind of blue Frankfort to a more red Frankfort. And it's happening in these small rural counties.
I think one thing you saw, too, in this race was it was very similar to McConnell and Grimes, where they tried to paint Conway as another disciple of Obama. And it worked well when they ran against Grimes. And I think
Alison Lindgren Grimes, who is the Secretary of State, ran against Mitch McConnell in the fall.
Right. So I think that it worked well there, and they've tried it again. And if you heard the radio commercials or saw the TV commercials or saw some of the direct mail, there was once again that sort of equation of Conway is, you know, Obama's priorities, and they don't fit with Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then
another
thing I think when you talk to, you know, various people in Kentucky, you know, talk to lobbyists, that, you know, people felt like Bevin was relatable, felt like they could talk to him, and felt like, you know, Conway was a little different. He's not sort of your typical Kentuckian that people could connect with, maybe.
Now, Mitch McConnell, the senior senator in the state, was not a big fan of Matt Bevin since he ran against him and ran a rough campaign against him in the primary last year. But he did at the end come out and support Matt Bevin. Do you think that made the difference?
Well, I think it helped. I mean, you know, Matt Bevin or Mitch McConnell is a big fan of Republicans being elected to stuff. You know, that's
no
what
self-interest
he's
there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's not about Matt Bevin. You know, that's not his favorite person in the world, and I don't think they exchange Christmas cards. But he wanted to see Republicans win offices in Kentucky yesterday. And that's why he went, you know, the RGA, the Republican Governors Association, had pulled all their money out of Kentucky at one point. And Mitch McConnell was credited with going to the RGA and saying, look, put that money back in. You know, even if Matt Bevin doesn't win, we want to win some of these lower ticket offices, which they did. And I think that, in the end, helped Matt Bevin a whole lot. Whether or not he's that grateful to Mitch McConnell, that remains to be seen.
And not so grateful necessarily to Rand Paul, the junior senator from the state.
No. Rand Paul tried to help him, went down to Kentucky to campaign for him while, you know, he's on his presidential campaign. And Matt Bevin goes on the radio and endorses Ben Carson for president, which, you know, was, but, you know, Rand Paul did his duty and went and campaigned, saying, telling Kentuckians, this is the man that you ought to elect governor.
Do you anticipate that with Matt Bevin as governor, he'll undo an awful lot of what Steve Beshear has done in terms of health care and other things? Or do you think that the Democratic legislature will?
Well, there's some things that the Democratic legislature can stop. There are other things that Beshear did by executive order, which Matt Bevin could change, turn them around quickly, and Connect is one of them. The healthcare exchange, you know, could be in trouble in terms of the future of that. But you know, there are certain things that the Democrats in the legislature just aren't going to be able to stop.
We are going to take a short break. We'll continue our discussion of yesterday's election in just a moment. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about yesterday's elections. My guests are Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, Dr. Jean Beaupre, Xavier University Director for Government Relations, Sean Comer, who's also an advisor with the Denise Driehaus Campaign for Commissioner, Ohio Public Radio and Television, State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, joining us from Columbus, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Again, if you have a question or a comment, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Troy is calling from Covington. Hi, Troy. What's your comment?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I get my health insurance through Connect, which is the Obamacare program in the state of Kentucky, and thousands of other people get our insurance through there. And we're just scared to death that Bevin's going to shut it down and we'll be left without any insurance. And already this morning, I've requested a meeting with my state senator, Christian McDaniel, to see if he can help in any way prevent this from happening. So I was just curious from your panel if there's anything they could suggest that we can do to lobby Bevin not to take our insurance away.
Howard?
Well, I mean, Troy, it's not entirely clear exactly what he wants to do with it at this point. You know, I mean, it could be it's going away. It could be it's going to be changed considerably in terms of the options that are available to people. You know, we just don't know at this point. I think we're going to have to wait a little bit until, you know, December 8th when he becomes governor and starts speaking in more specifics, because he didn't do that during the campaign. He was all over the map on this issue. and starts talking specifics about what he intends to do with the healthcare system in Kentucky.
Troy, I hope that helps a little. I think, as Howard said, it's just not really clear.
It's just not clear yet. It's a little too early, but, you know, by all means, go talk to your state senator or anybody else.
I agree. I think this is the time to do that.
Yeah.
It's really in the, you know, this to talk about it. And if, I mean, he may very well just do something that he can say, I did this, and because people aren't going to pay that much attention. Right. And he, you know, and then it goes in his dossier or whatever. But I understand your concern because you feel sort of helpless, you know, now that this somebody else is in. But I just think it would take a long time. He's got other things he's got to do.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Troy, thanks so much for calling. Our number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. We haven't talked a lot. Karen, you alluded to it earlier, but the whole situation in Hamilton County last night where the polls ended up staying open late. Howard, you were predicting that probably wouldn't happen. Were you surprised when it did?
What?
That the judge would rule to keep him open.
Well, when they held the hearing, I found it kind of hard to believe that he was going to do that, given the fact that there was nobody in that courtroom who had been disenfranchised. Nobody. Eric Kearney was the person who had you know, filed the complaint. But, you know, he hadn't been disenfranchised. He'd voted. You know, there wasn't anybody there who had not been able to vote. So I was kind of surprised that he did it, but I guess he did it, you know, saying, okay, better safe than sorry. You know, if somebody, you know, wanted to vote, got tired of waiting, went home, now they can come back. They've got an extra 90 minutes where they can come back and then cast their ballots.
Karen, I'm guessing...
In the end, it really didn't make much difference.
Karen, I'm guessing that people in Columbus were not too excited with that ruling, or...?
Well, I guess one of the questions that came up on Twitter from my fellow reporter was, why did Responsible Ohio do this? Was there anything in this that would have suggested to Responsible Ohio that adding that 90 minutes would have helped their cause in any way? Yeah. And so I think that was a little bit confusing to some folks. But, you know, as a State House reporter, and my nth election, I don't even know what number it is. There's always a problem. There's always a glitch. There's always something that comes up. And so this is, you guys got this one.
Karen, there are 47 counties that are using this system now, the e-polling book, electronic poll books. Every one of those, during the first year, they had problems like this. And they got over them. And now they have no problems. Yeah. And it functions perfectly well in all of these other counties. And I have no doubt in my mind that in the future, these bugs are going to be worked out and it's going to be fine.
Right. And I asked the Secretary of State about that last night. Was this kind of a trial run for 2016 when, of course, we've got the presidential contest, all of Congress, the Ohio House, the third of the Senate. We've got a senatorial U.S. Senate race. And he said, you know, I'm confident in the technology, but glitches happen. And we just got to have to figure out how to deal with those and own our mistakes and move on from there.
Sean?
Yeah, I think that when the judge walked in the chambers last night, it looked like he had made up his mind. He was going to say, we're going to keep the polls open, that the arguments that were heard didn't really make much difference in the opinion. Felt like since it was a special hearing, sort of last minute, that he could incorporate sort of what he had heard himself throughout the day, that people were experiencing problems, the lines were longer, there were places where the IDs weren't scanning properly, and that he had a concern about that. But I think what's key, as you said, is that the glitches are worked out and that next year that you know, everything works well.
Yeah, I think Judge Ruhlman, I guess he was just, you know, if he erred, he was erring on the side of caution.
Right. You know. I think that's right. There was maybe it was in the paper, I don't recall, but he talked about the sanctity, if you will, my word, of each person's vote. And, you know, I have a certain respect for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
What happens with those? Those are all voted people that voted after 7:30. It was a provisional.
Yeah, anybody that voted from 7:30 to 9 o'clock cast a provisional ballot, which aren't, you know, they're not going to be counted, you know, for another 10 days or so.
And I hear there's a fair number of provisional ballots still out, like 77,000, which is a pretty good number for an off-year election. So there are a lot of provisional ballots out there.
Yeah, there's 11,000 in Hamilton County alone.
Will that change any outcome?
Well, I don't know. In a couple of local races, it might. We'll just have to watch.
Not in the state issues, you don't expect.
Oh, no, not in the state. No. No way in the state issues. But between 7:30 and 9 o'clock last night in Hamilton County at the polling places, when the judge had ordered these places to stay open, there were 1,090 people who went in and cast provisional ballots. Huh. And the grand total, which made the grand total of provisional ballots in Hamilton County yesterday, about 11,000.
So, where did the other 10,000 come from?
Well, just during the day, there's.
Okay, so these are not just during 7:30 and 9.
No, just during the day. I mean, they happen. You know, it happens every election. Certain people, you know, are going to end up voting provisional ballots, and you know, they wait until the Board of Elections begins the official count, and I think it's November 24th is the day by which they have to certify the results and send them to the Secretary of State. So, you know, we'll know by then whether or not these provisional ballots have any impact on any little local races.
Bridget's calling from Mount Lookout. Hi, Bridget. What's your question?
I guess it's maybe not so much a question, but a comment, and then they can reflect on it. I've worked the polls. I worked them for about 5 or 6 years. I couldn't this year. But I thought that if they'd done a little better communication up front, that we're going to try a new system, maybe through the news media, maybe through the Enquirer. But there wasn't any awareness on anybody's part that this was going to happen. And so I think it hit people wrong, because on social media, the biggest complaint was, why didn't we know this?
Howard?
Nope.
Well, here's the thing. Most of the problems that took place yesterday in the polling places, they weren't the voters' fault. It wasn't the voters' fault. It was the poll workers' fault. The poll worker, you know, they had the 3 hours of training, but something, you know, fell through the cracks, and they weren't, you know, either weren't operating the equipment correctly or the equipment was failing. It wasn't the voters' fault at all. And there was news coverage of this coming up. I mean, we did stories about when they tried this out in a few different precincts earlier this year. And, it's not one of those things that the voter has to worry a whole lot about. It's the poll worker who needs to be trained and aware and able to function. And that didn't happen in some cases yesterday.
Thanks for your call, Bridget. We appreciate it. Got a question now from Steve in Oxford. Hi, Steve. What's your question?
It's more along the lines of a comment, and that is to the effect that I take issue with the comment that when the census arrives and districts are drawn, that there will not be many changes, I think was the way it was phrased, in the drawing of the districts. It doesn't expect many of them, whatever many means. I look, simply looking at the language and the analysis of it, is according to the principle of representational fairness. Now, as to exactly how that is brought about, one cannot say, but the idea that representational fairness will not be engaged, will not be followed, will not be a rule according to the drawing of the district.
Karen, we're almost out of time, so I'm going to have Karen respond.
Yeah.
Karen?
Yeah, I think what I was saying is that I don't think that redrawing the lines is going to automatically mean we're going to have half Republicans and half Democrats in the Ohio legislature. I just don't think that that's going to happen, and other experts have backed me up on that.
Yes.
And so, you know, you're going to see some changes, of course, over time, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near a half and half split if anybody was expecting that.
Thanks so much for your call, Steve. We certainly appreciate it. We will continue to follow this provisional ballot issue. Howard, you will certainly have more on that on our air. Howard's, of course, on every Monday on Morning Edition at 7:44 and 9:44. So we'll be continuing to talk about that. Thank you all for being here. It's really been a very interesting discussion. I want to remind our listeners that if you have any other information you'd like about the election, we have many, many stories on our website, WVXU.org, that will fill you in on all the details. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. Our assistant producer is Belinda Kai. The technical director was Kevin Rowinski. Stay tuned for Here and Now. That's up next on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.
Neighborhood Economics Conference will be held later this month at Xavier University. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll learn about the conference designed to highlight the importance and foster the growth of the economy at the local neighborhood level. And the Affordable Care Act Health Insurance Marketplace open enrollment period for next year began November 1st. We'll hear what you need to know before you buy health insurance. That's Cincinnati Edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.